Just coming up on the witching hour, so I think we'll go ahead and get started. I'm going to mute all. As usual, you'll have the ability to unmute yourself. Please feel free to do so. If you have a comment or question, please remute yourself afterwards so we keep background noise to a minimum. Later on this evening, the deck in PDF form, the audio, and the contents of the chat window will be posted on our website for your pleasure. And with that, I will hand it off to Alan to bring us through tonight's deck.
Okay, thanks, Chris. We're going to start off with a question that came in about Edge. Now, how to stop Edge and Bing opening on a Dell Windows 10 running laptop. And basically, the problem is when the PC wakes up from sleep mode, then Edge and Bing, as a search engine, I guess, and open up. But it doesn't happen when the laptop is booted normally. So Chris actually looked at a few websites that have all kinds of suggestions, but he was busy doing other stuff, so I volunteered to make up these slides. And I looked through the suggestions, and basically they come out to these kind of things. And there's some classic ones here. I love the third one down. Make sure Edge is not your default browser. That will probably stop it opening.
Guaranteed not.
And then disable Edge preloading from the group policy editor. Well, that's fine if you've got a high end of Windows, but Windows Home, for example, you don't have access to the group policy editor, so that doesn't help. And then the next one down, user registry editor. Well, everybody loves regedit and finding all those weird and wonderful registry keys. But interestingly enough, the one that kind of jumped out in terms of most people who commented on these suggestions found that this one worked. And I find this one quite bizarre. I mean, disable the spotlight images on your lock screen, and that will stop Edge opening after the PC boots from or starts up from sleep. But sure enough, these are the instructions. Go to settings and the personalization tab, and then find lock screen. And then it's either personalize your lock screen, or sometimes it's called background. And then instead of the drop-down menu here saying Windows Spotlight, you change it so that it says picture or slideshow. And lo and behold, I sent that suggestion to the member, and she says, I just did that and it worked. Quite amazing. Now, I have to say, I don't use Edge, so all this is kind of Greek to me. I had no way of checking all this stuff. But Chris came up with another suggestion as to why it works.
Yeah, now Elizabeth's on the call tonight, so Elizabeth, if this resonates with you at all, that's great. But even if it doesn't, other people may find this useful information here. So I thought, given that the problem is that Edge and Bing, Edge is opening up when you wake up from sleep, and it's loading a page from Bing, and the problem went away when the spotlight was disabled. Next. I thought that maybe the problem might actually be what is really normal behavior of Spotlight. And it's just a quirk of how it works that they don't actually tell you this is what goes on, but this is the way Spotlight actually works. Next. So Spotlight works by showing you places around the world, some photograph of a place around the world on the lock screen. Next. And it'll give you a little bit of a snippet of text about that location in the center of the screen in this black box. The black box only appears when you actually hover your mouse over top of it. Otherwise, you just see the white text against the background of the back photo. Next. So if you actually click on the text or anywhere in the box when you actually hover your mouse over top of the center of the screen, you'll get your normal prompt for a password. And then the desktop will load. And then Edge will load with a Bing search, giving you additional details about that particular location. Next. And a little bit of sarcasm here is just because, of course, you know, who doesn't use Edge? as a browser and Bing as their search engine. So it's perfectly logical that it would load Edge with a Bing search. Next. So the solution is don't click the text on the Spotlight lock screen. So you can hit the space bar and you'll get the password prompt. But then when you put in your password and the desktop loads, you won't get a window opening up of Edge with Bing with details about that particular location. Next. Now, I actually think the Spotlight screen is kind of neat. It is pretty spectacular photography that they have on there. It has some really, really nice images and some interesting places around the world. And if you decide that you really would like to get that and get more information about the location of the Spotlight image, then you can go ahead and click on the text on the lock screen. The desktop loads, Edge and Bing will load, and you'll get a little bit of information about it. Now, there is no way to make it, to my knowledge, there is no way to make it use your chosen browser and search engine, and I don't think that will ever change. If, however, you get this block screen comes up, it's something that you're really not interested in, just go ahead and hit the space bar to get the login prompt. You put in your password, and you continue on. You won't get that window of Edge and Bing.
Okay, so, thanks, Chris. That explains why I've never seen that behavior, because I always have my lock screen set to picture, and I don't use Spotlight, so it doesn't load Edge to try and tell me stuff about the picture, I guess.
As a world traveler, you might want to try Spotlight.
Yeah, I might, but then I'm going to have Edge loading, which I don't want.
Well, no, just hit the space bar. Don't click the text.
Okay. All right. Chris has a follow-up basically on his rant about Windows 11 and file history, and he's going to give us a solution tonight.
Partial solution tonight, and it's going to build over the next couple of weeks. So I'm going to talk about Free File Sync. Alan told me about this program years ago, and I wasn't too interested in what it could provide for me at the time. I was actually getting the functionality I needed out of file history built into Windows. But Free File Sync is a very, very flexible program to be able to back up files and folders. It's free and open source, which is kind of nice. It has a 15-year-long history. So it was first released on August 10th, 2008, and it basically is updated every month. So it has been updated 184 times, and the most recent was June 20th of this year. It is cross-platform, so it's available for Windows, Linux, and Mac OS. So that can be nice for some people. Next.
Just note, Chris, that the updates are quite frequent, but you don't need to update. Some of the updates are really obscure fixes to things. And
yeah,
the
fixes
seem to just work fine.
Yeah, or if you do use Free File Sync, take a look, though, because they do introduce new features and things like that. So beyond just bug fixes and things like that, sometimes they'll introduce new functionality that you may find interesting. It is a pretty fast and easy upgrade to it every time, and it is free. So, as Alan noted, you don't have to upgrade every time. Okay, the abilities of Free File Sync that originally got me using it, this goes back a couple of years ago, was to be able to back up the OPCUG website over FTP, File Transfer Protocol, and the ability to back up our shared drive, which is actually a Google Drive. And neither of those are easily done by other means where you only copy new or changed files. The OPCUG website is gigabytes of information. The shared drive we have is hundreds of megabytes, maybe into gigabytes at this point in time. And so I wanted to just copy new or change files rather than just wholesale copying everything. Very difficult to actually automate that for free. There are some commercial programs that will allow you to do that, but I would rather not be beholden to a commercial program. Next. So I have a new interest in Free File Sync, and this comes out of my latest rant. So my three-pronged backup strategy is that I have daily image backups of the entire computer. I have a monthly off-site image backup of the entire computer, and those are great for disaster recovery. I can also use them to recover just individual files and folders and things like that, but it's primarily there so that I can recover if my hard drive dies or something like that, or some really disastrous thing happens, I just want to get back to a working state. And the third prong was using file history backups for important data files that change on an ongoing basis. And that was the subject of my latest rant. So next. File history. The thing that is really nice about it, it maintains near real-time backup. It can be as frequently as every 10 minutes that it looks for any change or new files. So if I screw up on a file and I don't have file history, my image backup could be as much as a day old. So if I'm making ongoing changes to a document I'm working on, and then I go, oh, crap, I really want that version that was 2 hours ago, I'm out of luck. Because if I have to go to my image backups, they ran overnight and they won't have those changes that I was working on the document that day. The other thing it gives you is version history, which allows you to recover really old versions of data files from months or even years previous. So really, really nice to be able to do that. And on that case, if I screw up on a file, my image backups usually only go back about 4 months. So I'd be out of luck getting back that file as it existed last year, the before, or whatever like that. Next. So as my rant had, Microsoft seems hell-bent on destroying file history. And I have the link to that. And it's in the chat window now as well. Next. So can free file sync actually replace file history? Next. Yes, it can. Next. So over the next couple of Q&A sessions, I'll start with a really simple example of using file history, and I'll build to more complex situations.
That's using pre-file sync, right?
Yeah. Okay, so if you want to use free file sync, you download it from freefilesync.org. And the download button is right on the main page on there. You download it and install it, and you're off to the races. Next. So let's look at a very simple scenario. Say we wanted to back up a single folder to an external hard drive I have plugged into the computer. So the folder that is containing documents that I want to back up is /c:\user\ctaylor\documents. And I want to maintain a copy of everything that is in that folder on an external drive, which will happen to be drive /e:\document\backup. Next. I want to make /e:\document\backup identical to what exists in my documents folder on the C drive. Next. So if a file gets added or changed in my documents folder on my hard drive, I wanted to add that file or file to the /e:\document\backup. Next. If I happen to remove a file from the documents folder, I wanted to delete the copy that is /e:\document\backup. Next. In free file sync parlance, this is known as a mirror. Next. So if you load up the program, you end up with a lot of blank boxes all over the place. And the first thing you want to do is set the source and the destination in the two boxes, the source being on the left, the destination being on the right. There's a number of ways of doing that. So you can drag and drop from File Explorer, and you can see my action here. I'm actually dragging the documents folder on my hard drive, and I'm just dropping it into the left-hand box. Next. You can use the Browse button that is in the top beside where you put in the source and destination. It'll bring up a standard open dialog box, and you can navigate to where you want. In this case, I'm setting my destination to drive E, documents backup. And then I click on the button to add it. So now I have the source and the destination are actually set. Next. So the default for file sync is a two-way synchronization. And I'll talk more about that in a future session. But for now, what I want is a mirror. Okay, I want the destination to always be made identical to the source. Next. So I click the little right triangle beside the gear icon, and I can choose the type of synchronization I want, two-way, mirror, update, or custom. And so in this case, I'm going to select mirror, so I just click on that. Choose that, and then next. So the next thing I want to do is compare these two directories. So again, I'm going to be comparing my hard drive, drive C, my documents folder with the external hard drive. And so I click compare, next. And it, within less than a second, in most cases, because this is all local files, you can see that it's populated these two windows. Next. So on the left-hand side, which is my documents folder on my hard drive, I have it found 44 folders, 211 files, 416 megabytes that exist in the source but not in the destination. Next. On the destination side, it's an empty folder. So there are zero folders, zero files that exist in the destination but are not in the source. Next. Then you click on synchronize, and this does the actual copy. So next thing you get is confirmation, where it'll tell you what it's actually going to do. It's going to copy 416 megabytes, and it's going to be 255. I don't know. I must have run this at a different time. It's not matching up with the number of files there.
That's probably the files and the folders.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, you're right. Files and folders. So it's going to have 255 things that are going to get copied over to the other side. Next. And then you click on start and you get an in progress and you can see the actual files being copied over. Next. And then eventually it ends up saying it's successfully completed. Next. So if I click compare now, next, I have no files or folders listed on either side because they are a mirror now. They are identical. There are no files that exist on my hard drive in the documents folder that don't exist in the drive E. And there is no files in drive E in the backup document backup folder that don't exist in that. So the compare is complete. And those two directories are identical. Next. And you can see at the bottom, it actually says no files to synchronize. So the source and the destination at this point are matching, which is exactly what we wanted. Next.
And just a note here, Chris, that no files to synchronize is only a message which is displayed briefly.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know that.
It disappear.
Okay.
But you'll see that, you know, there are no files left in either window.
Yeah. Okay. Good to know. Okay. So say I want to run this job in the future. So I do all this setup and everything like that. I don't want to have to go into Free File Sync every time and tell it, oh, okay, this is my source. This is my destination. Oh, I want it to be a mirror synchronization and so forth. So what I can do is I can click on Save As, and it'll be either on the menus or the toolbar has the Save As, and you give it a name, and next. Then the job will actually be listed in the left-hand panel under the name that you just gave it. And so you can run that anytime by loading up PreFileSync, click on that, and then select compare and synchronize. So you don't have to redo all the steps of setting up the job. So what if I run PreFileSync a week later? So again, I bring up the program. My job is listed in the left-hand panel. And so I click on it. Next. I click on compare. Next. And then all of a sudden I have some differences. So if we look at it, the orange lines in here are showing three files that exist in the left-hand side, but you'll see that on the right-hand side, it's blank. So they don't exist on the right-hand side. And so they're new to the source, they're not in the destination, and the action, which you can see in the center column there, there's the green arrow or plus, and it's going to add those files to the destination if you click on synchronize. Next. So we have one file here that actually exists in the destination, but not in the source. So maybe I deleted it from my documents folder on my hard drive. Or potentially I could have actually accidentally or otherwise actually added it manually to the external hard drive. So the action on that is going to be delete it from the drive E, the external hard drive. Again, we're trying to make things look identical. Next. Then we have a file called restaurants.txt, and it exists in both the source and the destination, but it's a different file time or size. And I don't care which is more recent or bigger or smaller or anything like that, but because we want the destination to always look the same as the source, the action on this is going to be to copy that file from the source to the destination, overwriting the file that is actually there. Next. So again, with synchronization mode set to mirror the destination, when you click on the synchronize, it'll always be made identical to the source directory. Next. So does it replace file history? Well, not yet. Next. So far, we have a manual process. So we have to run free file sync, do a compare, do a synchronize. And so we can manually synchronize those. But what about the history part of file history? So what we have so far, it'll actually remove old versions of documents from the external hard drive. It's always making it just look identical to the source drive. Next. So to truly replace file history, we're going to need to, first off, automate the process to run frequently. Now, file history can run as frequently as every 10 minutes, so that's my benchmark. I want it to run at least that often. And I want to actually preserve old versions of documents rather than deleting them. Next. So more to come. I'm going to build on this next week. We're going to start building in those automation processes and the ability to preserve old versions of documents. So that's it for this week.
Okay, thanks, Chris. And I highly recommend free file sync if you have any kind of need for file and folder synchronization. It's a really good program. Okay, moving along, we have an item here from Bob Walker, who's going to tell us all about recycling.
Okay, let me just share the screen here. And okay, everybody see the first slide there?
Yep.
Okay, so tonight we're going to talk about recycling. And in past presentations over the last year or two, we've covered backup power sources, and this includes solar, uninterruptible power supplies, and generators, and we've also covered surge protectors. Then this April, we had this wonderful ice storm, and this led to updates to these original presentations, as well as other things we could do during the power outages. So ultimately, this led to the question of what do we do with all this stuff when it's time to dispose of it? And there's been some back and forth on the OPCUG forum there on this as well. So tonight we're going to cover recycling. We're going to look specifically at recycling things like batteries, electronic waste, printer toner and printer ink. But we'll also have a look at some recycling in general as well. And a lot of the information I'm going to give tonight is specific to the city of Ottawa, but most municipalities and townships have similar programs, and you can find out more about these specific programs at their websites. And then I give the URL there for the city of Ottawa's website, which is Garbage and Recycling. First thing we're going to cover is recycling batteries, because this has been a topic on the forum for a little while here. If you go to recycleyourbatteries.ca, you can recycle, according to them, you can recycle your single-use and rechargeable dry cell batteries that weigh up to 5 kilograms each at Staples, Lowe's, Rona, The Source, Home Hardware, Rexall, Home Depot, and Best Buy, and 9,000 other locations. And they have a search tool to find locations close to you on their site. Now, I've underlined Staples and Lowe's because I've used them for recycling batteries, and it's never been a problem. And I've put an asterisk beside Home Depot and Best Buy with the note, check with the store first. Because I've personally had some problems with this. Or according to people on the forum, they've had some issues with this at Home Depot and Best Buy. Now, according to the instructions at the Recycle Your Batteries website, first of all, you collect your batteries that you've replaced, and you put them in a non-metal container, such as a shoebox, a plastic takeout container, a glass jar, a Ziploc bag, and they'll add up pretty quick. To reduce the risk of sparks, use non-conductive tape to cover the positive terminal of any lithium and small sealed lead acid batteries, button cells, and alkaline batteries over 12 volts. Or alternatively, you can place them in individual plastic bags. And then you drop them off at the selected location. They recommend every 3 months or so to avoid corrosion, because a lot of normal alkaline batteries can leak and corrode over time. They also give some more detailed instructions for handling and disposing of other types of batteries, including e-mobility batteries, and these electric bicycles or hoverboards or whatever, and managing damaged batteries. Note that damaged lithium metal or lithium ion batteries are considered especially hazardous and should not be placed in a regular recycle box for recycling. So if the batteries, these batteries are damaged, they'll suggest ways to deal with them otherwise. Total battery, which I've talked about before, will recycle most used batteries, and sometimes they'll even pay you a core fee for used car and deep cycle batteries. They have three locations in the Ottawa area, as well as I think Barrie and Toronto. And most of the stores that sell lead acid batteries, which are your car, truck, and deep cycle batteries, will take them back for recycling. And this includes places like Canadian Tire. At least some of the Ottawa Public Library branches recycle batteries, but you check with the branch first, because the Ottawa Public Library's main website doesn't really speak much about it. Again, tape over the terminals of lithium batteries to avoid any fires, and separate the batteries by type into bags. E-waste. We're going to look at recycling e-waste. E-waste includes desktop and laptop computers, peripherals like keyboards and mice, monitors, TVs. You know, there's a whole list there, and I'm not going to go through the whole list, but you get the idea. Now, be sure to remove any personal information from these devices before you recycle them. If it's a matter of something like a bad hard drive that you can't get the information off of, drill a hole through it. Most electronic retailers like Staples and Best Buy will take back electronics for recycling, provided it's something that they sell. But check on their websites or check with a particular store for more information. Some not-for-profit organizations have e-waste recycling programs as fundraisers, and so check their websites for more info. Previous to COVID, OPCUG did some an annual e-waste recycling program, but we're not doing it anymore because we're doing all our meetings online here. As an example of this, though, you can drop off your e-waste 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, behind the Kempville Youth Center at 5 Oxford Street in Kempville. And I give the URL for their website there if you download the deck and click on it. You can get some more info on e-waste recycling at the Electronic Products Recycling Association Brackets Ontario website, because they apparently have a website on a per province basis. If you Google e-waste recycling Ottawa, it will give you a whole lot of listings, but keep in mind that many of these listings are businesses that do this for a living, and they may not take your e-waste for free. They typically deal with other businesses and government departments that are getting rid of large quantities of e-waste. You can drop off your e-waste for free at the City of Ottawa's Trail Road dump site. And there's a URL there to click on for more information. And we'll talk more about the Trail Road dump sites further on in this presentation. So printer toner and ink cartridges. There's been some discussion on this on the OPCUG forum. You can recycle your printer's toner cartridges at any Staples and apparently at EnviroLaser on Colonnade Road. And you can recycle the ink cartridges at any Staples. Now, according to their website, Best Buy accepts both types of cartridges, but in recent discussions on the forum, some members have reported some issues with this, and so it's best to check with your particular Best Buy branch first. Now, I'm going to do a special shout-out here for recycling at Staples. They have one of the best recycling programs of any of the major electronics retailers. They'll take in batteries, printer, toner, and ink cartridges, and they'd like the ink and toner cartridges sorted by type and brand. For example, Hewlett-Packard toner cartridges or Epson ink cartridges. They also take in e-waste and other items, including batteries. At my local Staples, which is in Kempville, the recycling center is just inside the door to the right of the entry foyer. Other branches have it near the printer supplies area. You may need to bring larger e-waste items, like old computers and that, to the service counter. So before you bring them into the store, check with the store about where they want it. Some of them want it dropped off at the back at the shipping dock if you have a sizable amount of stuff. Major appliances. Now, most of the stores that sell major appliances like stoves, refrigerators, dishwashers, washers, dryers, microwaves, et cetera, will take your old appliances away for free and make sure they are recycled properly. This includes doing things like removing refrigerants from refrigerators and freezers and other such things, and most of it ends up going into metal recycling. Some of the stores will do this for free, others charge to do this. I've had a lot of experience with Corbay appliances. There's one of their stores at the IKEA Plaza in the West End, and I believe there's another outlet in the East End. They do delivery for free. They'll take away your old stuff for free. Their prices are generally better than most of the other retailers on the appliances anyway. And if you order the appliance before they close in the evening, it'll be delivered to you the next day as long as they have it in stock at their warehouse. And their warehouse is in Montreal. And so literally, because I live on sort of outside the main urban area of Ottawa, I've had deliveries the next day at 7 o'clock in the morning because they want to avoid Ottawa rush hour traffic. So do the outlying areas first. So Corbay is a great store to get your stuff at. Recycling for books. Now, starting July 1st, the City of Ottawa will no longer accept hard and soft cover books in their black bin, the paper and cardboard recycling bin. There are several used bookstores. For example, the Book Market chain has four locations in the Ottawa area. Now, keep in mind, they may not give you much money or any money at all for your old books at any of the used bookstores. There's not much of a market for old encyclopedias, National Geographics, etc. Some of the used bookstores will at least recycle them for free for you. Others may charge you. And they're very keen to get copies of current bestsellers. But they're probably way overstocked with older bestsellers. For example, the store in Kempville, I was talking to the gentleman and about what they take, and he pointed out that behind the store were four 18-wheeler trailers. And he said those are full of old books that are going for recycling. And he says one of the trailers is full of 50 Shades of Grey. And so he says we're recycling them for free, but we when they were still bestsellers, we would pay for some copies, but not anymore. Value Village will accept donations of books, as well as magazines, CDs, DVDs, vinyl albums, cassette tapes, and video games. But keep in mind they're a for-profit business. They support some local charities, but they are a for-profit business. Some not-for-profits have book sales as fundraisers, and check their websites for more info, or Google Used Book Sales Ottawa and to get a list. For example, the Ferguson Forest Center in Kempville has an annual book sale to support the Kempville Youth Center. And again, there the dates of the actual sale. You can drop off books for donations, and I give it a list of the times you can, and places you can do that as well. I've given boxes and boxes and boxes of books to these folks as we try and downsize over the years. And if they can't sell them, they'll at least responsibly recycle them. So what do we do with plastic bags? the meme here, the guy there says, I go to the grocery store and buy a pound of sliced ham in a plastic bag, a loaf of bread in a plastic bag, a gallon of milk in a plastic jug, a pack of napkins in plastic wrap, et cetera, et cetera. But they won't give me a plastic bag to carry it home, because a plastic bag is bad for the environment. So the City of Ottawa does not recycle plastic bags, but you can use the plastic bags in your green bin to wrap stuff up in. They had a lot of problems when they introduced the green bin, because people said they get all icky inside, and they have to hose it down and hose it out every time they put it out. And so the City of Ottawa finally invested in the equipment that will take the plastic bags apart, take the recyclable materials out of them, and dispose of the plastic bags in a responsible way. Now, I'm not sure if they still do it, but before COVID, Walmart and Lowe's used to recycle regular plastic grocery bags. Now, since most grocery stores aren't giving those out anymore, I don't know how many of those are going to build up. So we're going to talk specifically now about the City of Ottawa's recycling. They sponsor what they call a Take It Back program, where local businesses take back many of the products that they sell. These businesses ensure the items are reused, recycled, or disposed of properly. And you can find these Take It Back members, as well as information on what to do with other waste items, using the city's online Waste Explorer tools. So if you download the deck and click on that, it'll take you to the Waste Explorer tool. The city also hosts several household hazardous waste events in different parts of the city during the spring, summer, and fall, where you can drop off your household hazardous waste. The events only accept waste from City of Ottawa residents. So they'll really ask you to prove you live in the City of Ottawa and all that, because they're not in the business of doing this in expensive recycling for other municipalities. If it's corrosive, flammable, or poisonous, it's hazardous waste. These types of products contaminate water, and they contaminate landfills, and should never be poured down the drain or put out with your regular garbage. There's a website connection there for more details on these. these depots accept, and there's a whole list of materials there, and it includes things like compact fluorescent light bulbs. There was a question on this on the OPCUG forum a little while ago. Stuff like fire extinguishers, oil filters, pool chemicals, all sorts of stuff. And there's a much more comprehensive list on the city's website. Now, pre-COVID, at these household hazardous waste events, they used to accept e-waste as well. But now e-waste has to be disposed of elsewhere. And note that if you take your used oil and or steel gas in a container like a jerry can, you must ask them for the container to be returned to you after they empty it. Otherwise, it'll disappear and you'll never see it again. What they do is they empty it into a big tank and bring it back and put it back in your car for you. Here are the dates for the 2023 household hazardous waste events. They're all from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. And the last vehicle will be emptied at 4 p.m. So if you're still in line at 4:01, you're out of luck. Some of these dates have already passed. I was planning on doing this particular presentation a few weeks ago, but a couple of weeks ago I gave a presentation on the Tale of Three Laptops, and it illustrated that my main computer had to be sent back for repairs, so that put everything back for me for a while. The Trail Road Dump. This is on Trail Road, which is off Moody Drive, south of Fallowfield Road. They'll allow you to drop off tires, and this is with or without rims, metals, and e-waste. They'll allow you to drop off these things for free. You have to pay by weight to drop off anything else, which includes construction waste, garbage, yard waste, and other things, some of which they'll pick up for free at the curbside. And they don't accept cash since the start of COVID anymore. You have to use a debit or credit card. Household hazardous waste and liquid waste is not accepted. And a list there, the normal hours are Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. And during the summer, there's some special times there as well where they're open on weekends or holidays. And then you click on the link down there, and it'll take you to the website and give you a lot more specifics. City of Ottawa's curbside recycling, they have their green bin, which is organics, and you should really go to the website and see what they accept, because it includes dog and cat poop, used kitty litter, meat, heavily food soiled pizza boxes, heavily food soiled paper towels and stuff, includes used tissue and everything, but they have some caveats around all this, so check the site. The blue bin is basically metal, plastic, glass, except for beer, wine, and liquor bottles, and cartons like milk and juice cartons, soup cartons, and drink boxes. The beer, wine, and liquor bottles can be recycled at your beer stores and some other liquor outlets. The black bin, you can put in clean or lightly soiled paper and cardboard, except, as mentioned before, the books. Do not put in stuff like paper towels that have been used with bleach and harsh cleaners, because those will contaminate the recycle environment. And then you can use these big paper yard bags for yard waste, like leaves, small branches, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You can also bundle up branches in string or twine, but don't use plastic rope. And you can see their website for more details, rules, and for what's included and what's not. The curbside garbage collection, The landfill is filling up fast, and more than half of what currently goes into the landfill should go into green, blue, and black bins or into yard bags to be recycled. So the Trail Road facility, which is the City of Ottawa's main dump site, they expect it to reach capacity in 13 to 15 years, and they're trying to put this off as far as possible. So starting next year in 2024, the City of Ottawa is going to lower its limit for curbside garbage collection to 3 items on collection day from the current limit of 6 items. This will help reduce unnecessary waste over the landfill, and the city's going to put out a lot more information on this as the date gets closer and closer, and they try and figure out how it's all going to work. The 3-item limit will not apply if you live in an apartment building, or won't apply if you live on a farm and you have a lot of agricultural waste. There's a couple slides here with all the URLs you can click on that I've mentioned in the presentation. And in a future session, I'm going to cover the care and feeding, the dangers, and the disposal of lithium batteries. This has become a major issue. Most major cities, the fire departments, have had to respond to many fires that are caused by lithium batteries in one way or another. And these are in everything from your smartphones up to your electronic bikes and stuff like that. So we'll cover some of the things you have to do if you're going to get rid of them. And that's it for tonight.
A few questions and comments. Bob, Carol wants to know if resetting to factory settings, does that remove all personal information from devices?
Does it remove what?
Personal information.
No. No, you have to basically wipe the hard drive clean, or at least wipe out all the directories that have personal information in them. For example, when I sent my laptop back 3 times for repairs, I wiped out all the directories with personal information. I also uninstalled Google because it has all sorts of personal information in that and some other apps. And then when I got the thing back, I did an image restore and put everything back in. So it wasn't it was a lot more work to erase the personal information than it was to restore it all back again using EASIS to do, which Chris and Alan have talked about several times.
Yeah, I think if you've got a hard drive, you can secure.
You know, now keep in mind that
smartphone to factory settings, get rid of anything else?
I think smartphones are a little bit more likely on factory reset, but check the documentation to see what it really does.
Okay. And Marjorie notes that the trailing edge, which are members of the club, they accept some e-waste, so that's another location. Timothy notes that Dollarama is now charging an eco fee of 3 cents for everything electronic that it sells, which actually raises an interesting question, Bob. When we buy electronics these days, we pay an e-fee, an eco fee. How come these companies can charge us to recycle it if we've already paid to recycle it?
Well, generally, the retailers will take back what they've sold because that's part of the eco fee. They're somewhat obliged to do that. But that said, they don't necessarily do that, all of them. And there's other companies that do e-waste recycling on a commercial basis. And because they're not the ones that accepted the eco fee, they're not obliged to take it away for free. In fact, the eco fee goes to pay these companies to recycle the stuff. And keep in mind some of the retailers that I've mentioned, like Best Buy and Home Depot, are a little bit sketchy on what they take back. For example, in my garage and in my large shed, the previous owner installed 8-foot fluorescent light fixtures. And most fluorescent light fixtures are 4-foot. So I had to replace the bulbs in a couple of these. And when I bought the new bulbs at Home Depot, I asked specifically, will they take back the old ones? And they said, oh, yeah, no problem. When I brought them back, they refused to take them on me. And I eventually got rid of them at the Household Hazardous Waste Depot for free. But Home Depot has a bad reputation for doing the recycling, and so does Best Buy. So the fact that they take this money doesn't oblige them to necessarily take it back later on.
Yeah, another fabulous government program by the sound of it. Linda and Carol both noted that the Ottawa Public Library will take books, and the friends of the Ottawa Public Library are the people that do the used book sales in the library branches. So that's a place you could maybe unload some books. Serge Eric wants to know, do you know if cadmium batteries are as dangerous as lithium? He still has rechargeable one from Radio Shack.
No, they're generally a lot more benign, and I'll talk about that when I do the presentation on it. But, for example, I have a lot of power tools, Ryobi power tools from Home Depot, 18-volt ones, and they all use the same battery family and everything. And these originally came with NiCad batteries. And a friend of mine used to, when the NiCad batteries got used up or flaky, because he only recharged so many times, he would actually take these battery packs apart, because inside it's just individual little NiCad 1.5-volt cells, and he would replace the cells for a fraction of the cost of buying a new battery at Home Depot. But he refuses, when they change from NiCad to lithium ion, he refuses to touch those because he says it's just too dangerous.
If you want to watch something entertaining, check out Linus Sebastian's YouTube videos when he was trying to take apart and rebuild lithium ion batteries. He had lots of mini fires.
Yeah, the lithium batteries, yeah, they can cause fires that are very, very hard for the fire departments to put out. And I'm going to bring up the example of a particular airline crash where some lithium ion batteries in the hold caught fire and brought the plane down within minutes. And when they did testing afterwards to find out why this happened, they packed up the lithium batteries in the same cargo container that also held expired oxygen canisters. Like, you know, when you get into trouble in an airliner and all the oxygen masks drop down, each of those masks is fed by a separate oxygen canister. And the airline was sending the expired ones back for recycling. They were in the same cargo container as lithium batteries. Everything is wrapped up in bubble wrap and cardboard. And when they tried to replicate the fire in a special facility for fire testing, the fire was so violent it almost burned down the facility. So lithium batteries can be very dangerous.
Okay, so if you want to get rid of your batteries, Tristan notes that IKEA has one of the nicest drop-off centers for both bulbs and batteries. That's probably a good place to take such things. Let them worry about it. Okay, we're well into the last 10 minutes here. So if anybody has any other questions, I will try and change the slide to, hey, look at that. And if anybody has any other questions or things they'd like to mention, now is your chance. You have to unmute your microphone if you want to talk, or you can put something in the chat window.
Nothing in the chat so far.
No. Okay. We've only got a few minutes, and we've got more material than is going to fit in 5 minutes, I'm sure. So.
Yeah, I think we should just carry them all over to next week.
Yeah. All right, so let me just move on to this thing then. you know that the club produced this poster, which essentially promotes the question and answer sessions, but also is intended to promote the club in general. So if you know of places that we could display it, you could let us know. Oh, there's an online version on the club's website. You can actually download it and send the PDF to organizations where they might post it on their website, or you can even print it off and post it on local venues that you know about. One of the things that we have done is actually distribute almost 3 dozen copies of this poster to the Ottawa Public Library, to their central distribution depot. And they are supposed to send it out to the individual branches. The problem is it's up to the individual branch whether they actually post it on their notice board. So when you go to your local library branch, can you please have a little look on the bulletin boards around the library and see if you can see our poster there? And if you see it, let us know. And if you don't see it, you might just wander up to the information desk and ask if they have received this poster and if they are going to display it, because it would be useful to people who have computer problems knowing where to fix them, especially these days that the library doesn't run computer sessions anymore as information sessions. So it's a useful exercise for the public in Ottawa. I think we should try and promote it as much as we can. So if you see it in the library, or let us know, or ask the librarian if they've received it, or think about distributing copies of it yourself.
Check that out.
If you have any questions tonight, we will carry on.
Alan, Linda's trying to break in.
Okay, I'll wait. I thought you
Sorry.
Go ahead, Linda.
Chat window.
Go back to the poster, please.
Go back to the poster. There we go.
Okay, so I really like the poster, and I will check in my libraries, but just one thing I noticed looking at it, if I was a total newbie to this and a total stranger to this club, there's nothing that says that the answers you give are free. Okay, so it says bring your problems, but yeah, there's lots of companies that want you to bring their problems too. So I just noticed that I didn't say anything about it being free. I didn't see the word volunteers. So just to warn you about that.
It does say everyone is welcome to
everybody's
attend.
Everybody's welcome to come and pay money perhaps, right? Everybody's welcome to bring their problems. Everybody's welcome to join the club. But it doesn't say you do it for free. It doesn't say it involves volunteers. So that's all.
True. Yeah. Maybe in round two we'll try and do that.
Our post office has a bulletin board that things like that might go on. I don't know if that's true of every kind of local post office, but our rural post office. So I'll print it off and try to take it down there, see. Because rural people don't have access necessarily to all the things that urban people do, so they might actually be interested.
And just for your information, Linda, this poster is on display at North Gloucester.
That's good. Glad mine made it.
Okay, so if you have questions or things that you'd like to share next week, we have some information already in the pipe, but we're always looking for more. If we don't do it next week, we can do it over the summer. So anything that you, any questions that you want answered or topics that you'd like to share, please let us know, and we'll be certain to include them at some point in the future. And that's everything we have for tonight. I hope everybody enjoyed the mixed bag, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, folks. Have a good evening.